Welcome to the President's Inbox, a CFR podcast about the foreign policy challenges facing the United States. I'm Jim Lindsay, Director of Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. This week's topic is China's Uyghurs. With me to discuss the Chinese government repression of the Uyghurs and other Muslim minority groups in Xinjiang province is Gulchehra Hoxha. Gulchehra is a journalist with Radio Free Asia's Uyghur service. She was born and raised in Urumqi, the capital of Xinjiang. She began her career at Xinjiang TV, where she created the first children's television program in the Uyghur region and hosted a variety of TV programs for Chinese media outlets. Shortly after she joined Radio Free Asia here in Washington, D.C. in 2001, the Chinese government banned her previous television programs. Gul has received the 2019 Sergei Magnitsky Award for Outstanding Human Rights Activism and the 2020 International Women's Media Foundation's Courage in Journalism Award. Gul, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much. It's my honor.
Gul, I suspect a lot of people do not know a lot about the Uyghur as a people or about Xinjiang as a region. So could you set the table for us and tell us a little bit about Uyghurs and about their role in China?
We are Uyghurs, Turkic-speaking language people, lives in northeast China. The Uyghur land was occupied in 1949 and was given a new name, Xinjiang, Uyghur Autonomous Region. Xinjiang means in China is a new frontier. China, which promises autonomy, but in reality, we see systematic government oppression of millions of people in the efforts to assimilate them. So more than 11 million of Uyghurs suffer under extremely harsh conditions in the world's worst Orwellian mass surveillance police state. According to some estimates, around 3 million Uyghurs are arbitrarily locked away now in concentration camps and the prison. And as we recently learned, many of them have transferred to the forced labor camps in mainland China, while millions of Han Chinese settlers are being invested to come and live in Uyghur region with the government's promise of high salaries, also a job and free housing. But right now, China's oppression of Uyghur people meets the UN's definition of genocide, according to many experts and reports. That means that Uyghur people right now are simply struggling just to exist.
Thank you for so ably setting up the challenge and the problem faced today. I'd like to unpack a lot of that. There's a lot there. Obviously, now Xinjiang is actually a fairly large place geographically in terms of China. I believe it accounts for something like 15% of China's landmass. It's relatively sparsely populated compared to other parts of China. And if you go to Xinjiang, I mean, the people who've lived there historically, obviously Uyghurs, but I think also ethnic Kazakhs,
other ethnics,
and Uzbeks living in the region. And as you point out, Chinese control of Xinjiang is relatively recent. This is not a control that goes back thousands of years, correct?
Mainly, Chinese government create the Bingtuan when they first come. So right now, Bingtuan's population is about close to 5 million already. It was in the 1954, 55, I believe, the Han Chinese population in Uyghur region only like under 4%, maybe. But today we can see more than half of the Uyghur region population is Han Chinese right now.
I should point out Han Chinese is the dominant group in China, constituting, I think, north of 95% of the population, if I have my numbers correct. Mm-hmm. Whereas Uyghurs are less than 1% of the population in China as a whole. Now, obviously, world spotlight has been on Xinjiang, has been on the Uyghurs because of the repression that Beijing has been engaged in with the mass detentions of Uyghur population. Now, when did this repression start, Gul?
I told you before, this is not only about this beginning from the camp, concentration camp. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's like systematic suppress. So after occupancy, so they're using every 5 years a new policy toward the Xinjiang. Mm-hmm. say, 5 years policy of Xinjiang. So right now, this year's going to be end of 13th 5 years policy. So we can see in the history of those 5 years planning, it's like all about how to open the resources, how to more control the Uyghur region, how to reconstruction the Uyghurs' life, and how to assimilate their culture and language, everything.
On the economic aspect, my understanding is that Xinjiang is home to considerable coal resources. It's also home, I believe, to natural gas. Mm-hmm. They have some of the largest natural gas fields in China. So that's part of the economic imperative you allude to. I also imagine that Xinjiang, just given its geographical location, is relevant to Chinese plans for the Belt and Road Initiative, sort of building connections throughout Central Asia to other countries that are resource rich. And obviously, China, relatively resource poor, that becomes important to the Chinese. And it clearly, you know, since the Chinese Communists came to power in 1949, they've tried to draw Xinjiang into the Chinese economy in politics. But getting to this issue of sort of these camps that have opened up, my understanding is this aspect of the suppression of the Uyghurs really began with emphasis in 2014 and then began to pick up around about 2017 or so. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Because of our region is border with 8 different countries. It's that strategically, it's very important for China to expand. So it's the road he should pass. So if the Chinese government think if the region cannot be very stable, so it will cause problem for economically, politically, geographically. So that's why the Uyghur region is very important for the Chinese government's policy.
Well, I will note that a lot of the commentary outside of China has referred to these camps as a modern-day gulag, referring back to the re-education camps and prisons that the Soviet Union ran. But I will note that the official Chinese line is that these are not re-education camps or detention camps, but I've heard them described as vocational training camps. And I believe that Xinjiang's current governor has actually gone so far as to refer to them as boarding schools designed to provide job skills to trainees. And when you hear that, what is your reaction?
Of course. Just look at our recent interviews about the camp survivors. What's happening to Uyghur women, particularly, because I usually more interview women than other. It was not enough that China's strict birth control policies put enormous pressure on Uyghur women. Some of them were punished severely for having an extra child. And now, according to new evidence, many were subjected to forced sterilization. According to many camp survivors' testimonies, Uyghur women in the concentration camps faced torture, rape, and death. And one of the most horrific actions against Uyghur is their forced separation from their kids. Physically, trauma is nothing compared to the psychological trauma intentionally inflicted on the parents who have no idea where their children are and where they are given to the orphanage or even alive. When it comes to technologies, China wants to build out this 5G telecommunication infrastructure for the entire world. But the same technology is developed and being used to violate human rights and the Uyghur region, where Uyghurs are completely cut off from the world. Even right now, we cannot contact our loved ones. They cannot call outside of Xinjiang and also cannot access any internet. So this is the situation, actually, in the Uyghur region.
Now, Gul, I should note that while the governor Xinjiang may call these camps boarding schools, it's the case that the Chinese government has refused to allow outsiders, foreign citizens, foreign journalists to visit the camps and to actually see them. So a lot of what we know is from people who've been there and managed to smuggle out messages, because you just pointed out the Chinese have really cracked down and tried to sort of hive off Xinjiang from the rest of the world. And my understanding is this has really struck home with you because you still have family behind in Xinjiang. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. China, to keep the world quiet about the building of hundreds of concentration camps, China even export its oppression to the Uyghur diaspora and internationally causes psychological trauma by threatening, arresting, or torturing our relatives to silence us. That is what China did to me. But when they arrest all of my family members to stop my reporting inside the US, I chose not to be silenced. China also effectively intimidates to world governments into silence. And those governments comply either out of fear of China or out of hope for some financial gain in their trade relations. So it's not only about me. In Radio Free Asia beginning, we noticed about 6 of journalists' family members was taken to concentration camp or the jail. But right now, we completely, all of us, lost contact more than 2 years now. So we even doesn't know are they alive or not.
I want to get to how other countries are reacting in a moment, Gul, but I'd like to talk just a little bit more about this. My understanding is that you have been given a so-called red notice, which means you're not allowed to return to China. And several members of your family have been arrested. My understanding is your father is under house arrest.
It's been many years. So since I came to US, because my voice, my face is very recognizable for the Uyghurs, because I was in TV from early teenagers time, maybe 11, 12. I was representing Uyghur children in the TV and I create TV shows. And I was in many movies and TV, also commercials.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know that. Okay.
So, but right now, all of them banned, but we still can find some in the YouTube. So after I came, I used my real name in the radio. When I decided to come to US, I already have fear, you know, Chinese government going to punish, you know, to target my family. But teaching kids, teaching next generation to freedom is not free. That's my action to them. So because I know I was working for Chinese government's propaganda on Xinjiang TV. So I know what is the policy toward the Uyghurs. So I feel that and I feel guilty. That's why I chose my freedom of press, freedom of speech. So I came to US. After that, Chinese government come to my parents' house, they were questioning them and threatening them and then even make them call me to come back to the country. And then after my father forced to retire, and he is a very famous archaeologist, he wrote so many books, and my mother is professor in the University of Medicine, so she is retired. And after they just home, but Chinese government never give them a passport. Once my mom came, but after she left, they took her passport too. So I couldn't see my father about 20 years this year, and my brothers too. And I lost contact of all my friends, family members, my relatives. But recently, you know, from the 2015, they opened the WeChat. So it was okay. Very popular. After the 2009 July 5th crackdown, so Chinese government loses policy toward the Uyghurs. Uyghurs feel, oh, finally we have little bit connect with the outside and we have freedom. So they start to searching their relatives outside. So we that time we all use iPhone.
So you could connect.
So they excitedly start slowly connected to us. Even I was surprised that time. My relatives also connected me. So they want to see my children, you know, how they grow, how was our life. Of course, everybody interested, everybody knows because they're missing me. So I was using that very carefully. But of course, many years didn't see them. I want to see them too. I want to connect. But that's the issue. They open up a little bit. So tracking those people who have relatives outside of Uyghur region. So in the beginning, they track the data of the WhatsApp groups, then just group by group.
Okay, so they're using this as a way to surveil and find out who has connections because they don't like those connections and want to snip them.
When we use about a year, and then all my family members in the WeChat group, we created relatives group. Our relatives group have 23 people, all of them in the one day, one night, all of them arrested by Chinese government. I believe they used that list, you know, who have connection with me, because all of them gone in the one night.
Okay. And I assume this is happening more than just to your relatives, people with connections.
Of course. This is the hack. You know, this is the hack. So many people couldn't understood, but after we realized, oh, actually, this is the trick, you know, from the Chinese government to monitor Uyghurs.
I'm curious, Gul, you talked about how it's been deliberate Chinese state policy to encourage Han Chinese to emigrate to Xinjiang so they can change the ethnic composition of the region.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, while there are very large numbers of Uyghurs who've been placed in these detention camps, many more Uyghurs live outside them. But I would have to imagine that the threat of being imprisoned has sort of changed life in Xinjiang for Uyghurs. Do we have a sense of how that's playing out?
Yeah, even inside the camp, or you are transferred to the forced labor camp, or you're living in the outside, the same. It's like heavy technological overland state. So it's like police state. You every moment, every move is monitoring. So they're using the government officers to track you. Also, they put the devices in your house. Even you want to visit someone, you have to have permission from the neighborhood police.
You have to have permission from the neighborhood police to visit a friend?
Or another friend or your relatives. You cannot visit just freely. Even more than four people in talking in the street, in the few minutes, police going to come and check your IDs and they will question you. So I cannot imagine that kind of life, you know. I'm living in this most free country in the world, in America. I cannot imagine. So the control is not only in your speech or your action. Even they want to control your mind. So they have every day 2 hours, even you're outside of the camp, must come to neighborhood government's direction, to neighborhood some area to gather, to learn red zones and the Chinese policy about Xinjiang or other stuff. So raising flag every Monday, you must be there. If you don't meet the government's expectation, you must go to the concentration camp again. So this is the life.
Gul, if I may, I want to sort of pick up on a point you made a moment ago about how other countries are reacting, what the global response has been. Now, Uyghurs are Muslim, and one might expect that there would be a significant hue and cry in the Islamic world over the treatment of Uyghurs in China. But as I look around, as best I can tell, Turkey is the only Muslim-majority country that has voiced concern about China's treatment of the Uyghurs. And even then, it was mostly framed as a call for China to provide full protection of the cultural identities of Uyghurs and other Muslims living in Xinjiang. Do I have it wrong? And why is it that countries that would seem to have a religious connection bond to Uyghurs have been silent?
As I said, generally, because of out of fear of China or out of hope for some financial gain in their trade relations. Of course, Turkey is the most related country. Even we can understood our languages and religion way and blood, you know, everything is very close. Of course, we hope like more support from Turkey, but people are supporting, like fully supporting. But I don't know about the government right now, why it's changing. Because after July 5th, if you remember in 2009, in Urumqi crackdown, when Chinese government using army to clear up this riot in Urumqi. And the strongest message from among those world leaders is the Erdogan.
Then Prime Minister of Turkey, now President of Turkey.
Yes, right now is the President of Turkey. He was accused Chinese government is genociding Uyghurs. That time, we were feel so supportive. But I don't know what is changed dramatically today. Nothing from government. But I believe Uyghurs still more than 30,000 people like live in Turkey as their second homeland, but many issue also for their stabilities, for their legal documents related to their legal documents to stay there. So many issues still over there. I don't want to talk too much because of the sensitivity of the policy about Turkey.
Now, it's been different here in the United States, certainly in recent months. The criticism coming from official Washington toward China has ramped up. I will note that this time last year, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo talked about the mass detention of the Uyghur people as the stain of the century. The United States has imposed visa restrictions on Chinese officials believed to be responsible for or complicit in the detention of Muslims in Xinjiang. And I will note there have also been sanctions and blacklisting of Chinese companies that are involved in the surveillance. And just last week, President Trump signed legislation that was overwhelmingly passed by Congress, mandating that individual Chinese officials complicit in the oppression of Uyghurs face sanctions. Do you expect these moves by the U.S. government to change Beijing's attitude, or do you think more is necessary?
Of course, it's a strong reaction from the U.S. towards the Chinese government repression of Uyghurs. Judging by the Uyghurs' reaction around the world, Uyghurs are hopeful that the other countries also will follow the U.S. and implement similar sanctions against the Chinese perpetrators, because the world should unite it about this situation, to change this situation, because as many experts and the reports and the world leader mentioned, China's oppression of Uyghur people meets the UN's definition of genocide. So right now we all hopeful more than before.
I'm struck, Gul, in your reporting, the risks you have taken to get the story out. I should note that part of the purpose of Radio Free Asia is to broadcast into parts of Asia where people do not have access to free in open news media. And you have written that reporting on the situation in Xinjiang has been important to you. And if I can quote from something you wrote in the Financial Times, in it, you have found renewed meaning in your work, and it's the only way that you've held on to your sanity. And as I look at it, I wonder if you have anything else you might want to share with us in what we'd want people trying to understand the situation in Xinjiang to know.
You know, I learned silence cannot help. Silence is death. So I learn from my action. I learn also from the very heroic action from individuals who give us very important evidence of those camps, who was released from the concentration camps while their old family in Uyghur region in Chinese government's hand, but they still choose to talk. I want to deeply appreciate those who, you know, taking risks to giving us or giving the world of criminal of Chinese government who toward the Uyghur and the other minority in the Xinjiang. So we can open up what's really behind the wall. So, you know, the Chinese government have the strongest propaganda tools to use to propaganda about their old policy to the world. So that's why not many people knows about Uyghurs, knows about Uyghur situation, knows about what Chinese government can do. Actually, today, everybody locked down in our own home. So we can feel what's the lack of freedom, what's the threatening, what's the physically and mentally, you know, suffer. So can you imagine the Uyghurs, millions of Uyghurs in the concentration camps. So I believe right now more people could understand us. More people can feel Uyghurs' sadness and those fears. So I'm hopeful. Yeah, I'm hopeful.
Well, Gul, your tenacity, determination in covering this story at personal risk to yourself and your family is admirable. I think your message is inspirational, and I'm awed by your courage. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to talk to you. And then thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk about Uyghur issue, also our situation. Thank you.
So I'm going to close up the President's Inbox for this week. My guest has been Gulchehra Hoxha, a Uyghur journalist with Radio Free Asia. Please subscribe to the President's Inbox on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. And leave us a review. They help us get noticed and improve the show. As always, the opinions expressed in the President's Inbox are solely those of the host, that's me, or our guest, not of CFR, which takes no institutional positions on matters of policy. Today's episode was produced by Zoe Collis with senior producer Jeremy Sherlock. Zoe also doubled as our recording engineer. Special thanks to Margaret Gatch for her assistance. This is Jim Lindsay. Thanks for listening.